and welcome to the November 3rd, 2021 meeting of the Clark County Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board. Welcome to everyone. It's nice you're not having to be out driving in the rain. And just want to remind you that this meeting is being audio recorded for recording purposes. Just wanted to let you know. Welcome. Our first agenda item is community input. Does anybody have some community input? You can go ahead and unmute yourself and speak up.
Can you hear me?
Hello.
There. Can you hear me now? I can hear you better now.
Okay.
Great.
Hello.
Hey, Susan. And, of course,
hey, Mr. Walt, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay, so Darla's got some community input she's getting ready to share.
Yeah, I just wanted to share that we've got legislative teas happening next week virtually. We've got the 17th District on Monday from 7 to 8 p.m. on Zoom, and then the 18th District is on Thursday from 6 to 7:30 on Zoom, and we've had to reschedule the 49th district. So I just wanted to let everybody know that that's happening, and we also have a training next week on Thursday on on universal design and setting up homes for success.
That sounds great. How did I get the Zoom link, Darla?
I will put my email in the chat, and people can just let me know they want it, and I'll send it to them.
Sounds like a plan.
Thanks, Donna, for the update.
Okay, and so I thought we were going to have some community input from another guest, and I see he's not here yet.
Yeah, he said that he is struggling with his connection, or to get connected, so maybe we could come back to him. If that would be okay.
Okay, so then our first order of business on the agenda is our just a little feedback on the National Disability Employment Awareness Month. As probably all of you at the meeting know, we did that virtual again this year. Mm-hmm. We had about 100 participants, and that number probably would grow if we counted the number of participants that were linked in as one. Definitely a feel-good event. Our video virtual guest speaker, Ryanette, did a fantastic job of taking us through the evolution and the quasi-recovery of pandemic employment. I know a lot of hearts were tugged there, and I'm hoping that that video is somewhere being shared over and over and over again. Hopefully next year we can congregate in a room together again, but it's nice to see that really awesome and cool things are happening in the community. I think some of you might know that Ridgefield really represented at their city council meeting and talked about Rosehour's grocery store and their award and really played it up, so that was awesome. Any other thoughts or feedback or comments about the meeting or the event?
Well, to try to give you a perspective of how influential this particular event is that the council member that nominated Ross Hours and who in turn attended the meeting soundly defeated her opponent in the election for city council yesterday. And I expect great things coming out of the city of Ridgefield.
That's awesome. Yeah, we're a mighty group. We are. Okay, any other comments or thoughts about the event? Okay, so it was brought up an idea about aging resources, and as our our population ages. Some participants are waiting in the lobby. To admit all participants in the lobby, press star 2-1.
Can you guys hear that when it says that?
I can.
Okay, sorry. I guess that's what happens when I call in.
No.
I did see that Peter, just joined from Commerce. He was our speaker who was gonna tell us a little bit about, ABLE accounts, tonight.
Is there a good time you want me to get started?
Sure. Susan? Go ahead, Peter. All right, Peter, the floor is yours.
Cannot get my screen share to work now.
I could talk a little bit about the aging resources, and then can we come back to you, Peter?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, as the board was discussing the important issue of aging and people with disabilities, and wanted to kind of see if we could put something into our legislative agenda about that, I did do some research and found some resources, national position statements, that a joint statement from the ARC and the American Association of Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities, as well as some testimony that was given to Congress in the recent past about the needs of people who are aging. There's also local resources that I put together. I did put it together kind of in a one-page document with some links and sent that out to the advisory board for your review. I will just read the statement that the joint statement that the National ARC and the American Association of Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities put out. It's brief. And there is more information on their website as well. But what they said is that people with intellectual and or developmental disabilities who are 55 years of age or older have a right to the same opportunities to enjoy full lives as other older people. They are entitled to full access to community supports, including support from those agencies that serve all older people. You know, that I think is something that y'all, we're going to have some more time to talk about the legislative agenda, but just wanted to kind of point out that there is some material sent and are available for reference as we get into the discussion about the legislative agenda earlier or later tonight.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Trish. Peter, how is your technology cooperating with you? Are you ready to... Oh. There we go. You're sharing. Perfect.
I believe you're muted. You're muted.
Yeah, you're muted, though.
All right. Now can you hear me?
Yeah.
We can hear you.
I'll do that, Shay. So I'm here to talk about ABLE. Thanks for your patience. And really the second bullet on the slide is the most important, is because any and all money that's in the ABLE account is excluded, ignored, when you talk about counting money towards an asset limitation. The other advantage is, of course, you don't pay the taxes on the earnings or when you take the money out. So it's like a Roth IRA in that sense is a really efficient savings program. And so who's eligible? So it's a federal program, so the disability onset has to be by age 26, because for the most part our audience is folks with DD, and for the most part they've been born with something, so that usually it's usually a given that they can get into the ABLE program. So you can show that you qualify by either SSI or SSDI, you're either eligible for it or you actually received it or are receiving it. That basically Social Security has gone through the program and said, yes, you're eligible. You can also get a psychiatrist or a physician to certify that the individual meets the definition. And for us at ABLE, it's kind of an online program. A lot of our footprint is virtual, so to open up an account, you just fill out the form. You can also print the form from the website, fill it out by hand, and mail it in. $25 is the minimum initial contribution you need to make to get started. And then you're on the way to perhaps saving up to $500,000. $500,000 is the limit. Best thing about the program is you get to spend the money. So these are the qualified disability expenditures that you can make from an ABLE program. And these are 10 categories, 10 really big buckets that are broadly defined. So basic living expenses can include groceries, household expenses, toilet paper if we have another rush at the stores due to the pandemic, and everything in between. There's, with the exception of some moral things that you can be doing, just about anything that you can expect somebody to need to spend their money on, regardless of where they are in their lifespan, whether we're talking about a child, a transition age, a young adult, a working adult, a retired adult, this will capture it. But things like gambling and those type of things are not covered. Yes, people may say they improve the quality of life, and it's a fun thing to do, but you can't use the money to actually gamble. You could go to the casino and buy a meal. You could certainly pay to see a band or a comedian or some type of show. And pay for lodging. You just can't use it for gambling itself. We went through the process and with all our state agencies to exempt the ABLE, so in their rules that they don't count any and all money that's in the ABLE account. So that we've got basic Apple Health, Apple Food, all those, or subsidized housing, they won't be counting the ABLE program money. One of the neat things about our program is that we do have a debit card, a Visa card. It's like a gift card. You can load the money from the ABLE account to your prepaid card, and then you can take it out into the community and use it just like anybody else. So it's also an equity and inclusion tool. So my son, I can load up his card. He can go to the movie theater and buy his popcorn just like anybody else can. We also do have on the platform a gifting option. So you can run essentially a GoFundMe campaign, and it's circulated amongst your social network, whether it's your social media, email, or something like that. So if you're going to Special Olympics, you need some money for the uniform, for the lodging, for travel expenses, you can run a GoFundMe campaign to do the gifting contribution. You can run it for anything that you want to do. It's also an investment vehicle. So we do have FDIC insured savings options and three other investment options. And because these are market-based bonds and equities, stocks and bonds, you can earn a lot of money and use occasionally to lose some money. And so most of our folks are actually in the FDIC savings account. ABLE is much cheaper than a special needs trust, which is really the only other vehicle out there that you can protect your assets with. Get that initial contribution. We're going to charge you $35 per year to maintain the account. If you choose the debit card, it's $1.25 per month. The investment fees are 30 to 38 basis points, like the decimal point, 0.3 to 0.38. So very low cost on the fees to get the money invested. And the miscellaneous fees are things like if we have to mail you something, whether it's a check or your statement, you're doing wire transfers, you sent us a check that's no good, we're going to charge you those various fees, settle up. For those folks that are actually also working, they can put up an additional amount. So the standard amount is $15,000 per year, and that's tied to the IRS gift tax exemption. And if they're working, they can do the gross of their wages or up to the one-person federal poverty level of a one-person household, which is $12,760 for the rest of this calendar year. So if you think about $15,000 plus $12,000, you know, this is like a Roth IRA on steroids. I mean, $28,000 per year could conceivably be thrown in somebody's payroll account, which is 3, 4, 5 times the amount that you could do in a Roth IRA, a retirement plan. So with ABLE, there's no early withdrawal penalties. There's no, so really a very efficient way for people to save money, whether it's short term or long term. Eligible for a saver's credit, and then we also allow organizational, what we call in ABLE speak, upright legal representatives. These are the Rep AE organizations, guardianships, and stuff like that. So if the individual signs a power of attorney over or lets these entities run their ABLE account for them, that's a possibility there. So for a lot of people that might be in a group home or something like that, then the organization can help run their ABLE account if they're not able to. Lots of videos on the website, like it, in 3, 6, and 9 minute bits. You know, again, that we're online, so if you have all the information, you can, you know, 15, 20 minutes at the most is what I've heard it takes to enter the data and put it in, and then in a week or two, once your check clears, you're good to go. If you're doing it on behalf of another person, whether it's a parent of a minor or the ALR, the authorized legal representative, same information with the addition that we need information on you too. Although these are really game-changing accounts for a lot of people, if there is a catch. So only the first $100,000 in the balance of the ABLE account is actually exempted from those individuals on SSI. You know, when you get up to $103,000 in your account, you now have $3,000 in resources. You're over the $2,000 limit. So the case manager at Social Security is going to lower your cash payment or even suspend you from your cash payments until you get underneath that resource limit. No effect on Apple Health, so you still keep your Medicaid benefits there. For all others that are not on SSI, then you get the full $500,000. So the big benefit is ABLE can be used to pay rent, but you need to take it out of your account the same month that you're paying rent. So if you took the money out on the 29th and you paid the landlord on the 2nd or 3rd, well, the local housing authority is going to count that as a resource because it wiped over the end of a month. So the key here, the next practice is take it out on the 2nd, pay the landlord on the 5th, and that way all the money is going in and out in the same month. Because regardless of who contributed money into the account, whether it was mom, dad, the beneficiary, him, her, they, their self, employers, friends, the $20 that you found on the sidewalk, it's all considered first money after the individual passes. And as a consequence, Medicaid recovery can happen against the ABLE accounts. These are two programs that run together, the DD Endowment for the Developmental Disabilities Endowment Trust Fund. This is a special needs trust program that's been around for 20 years. ABLE, we're just over 3 years running here in Washington. This is a heat map in the state of Washington. The darker colors are where most of the people have enrolled, and it funnels along the I-5 corridor where most of the population lives, with a little bit in Spokane. This is a new line. Look at the peak there. It's really the transition age kids and those that might be in college. This is where most of our enrollment, the age of our enrollments are at. So, really, I just think it's remarkable because, you know, everybody, our oldest person is 91. So as long as you're disability curved at age 26, you're eligible to get in. We have some future changes coming. The IRS dropped some final rules on this and we're going to take effect in December and early next year is that authorized legal representative is no longer a parent of a minor. It can now be a parent of an adult child, and a lot of other family members can take on that role, from siblings, the aunts, and uncles. You can still use the power of attorney. You can still go through the guardianship court process, but starting in January of 2022, our Washington state statute on guardianship is changing, and it now includes a conservator piece, and that's just somebody who's in control of the individual's financial assets. They can't make medical decisions for the individual. They can just help with the money side. Mm-hmm. The other piece coming along is that if you have a sibling or another family member that has eligible disability that they can have an ABLE account, you can name that person to be your beneficiary after you die, so that when your ABLE account, the assets are just transfer over to, let's say it's your sibling, and then there's no Medicaid recovery or anything like that, the money just went straight to the other person. We are doing a direct trading allocation strategy. It's legacy to the weeds, but normally what if you chose an investment option along with the saving option, let's say you're doing an 80-20 split, so every $100 that you put in, contribute, $80 goes into the savings account, $20 goes into the investment account, and every time you take $100 out, $80 would come out of your savings, and $20 would come out of your investment. But by doing direct trading, and you want to take that $100 withdrawal, now you can take the full $100 out of your savings account and leave all that money in the investment account there so they can continue to earn money in the market. Again, the new conservator level for the uniform guardianship statute and a new supported decision making within the court system. So a way for folks with DD to have some support making some crucial decisions without the need of a power of attorney, without going through the full guardianship process. Hmm. That's really nice to empower our citizens and residents that have DD with those skill sets. And then just quickly to ask, disability by age 26, you have to be a resident at the time you enroll, but you can certainly move out of state and take the account with you. $15,000 cap on annual contributions and $500,000 overall for contributions, but if you do the math at $15,000 a year, we're talking decades before anybody gets to that level. Mm-hmm. And lots of ways that you can stay in contact with us, with the program, videos, to social media, and to give me a call too. So hopefully that was a really short, fast overview to try to get you guys back on track.
I like the thought, but I have some questions pertaining to around that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, one of the questions is there a timeline that you need to spend the money down by? Because I know, like, with Social Security, they tell you if you have, like, over a certain amount of resource limit that you have to spend down within, like, a 60 to 90-day period, or otherwise, if you don't spend that money, you lose it.
Right, so if you move that money into the ABLE account, that would not affect the individual because you do not have to do a spend down because the money...
And what about if the person themselves is a homeowner? Like, say, for instance, they have their own home? How would that affect?
So you can't put a house, you can't put real property into the program. We only take cash.
Right.
And, so depending on what benefit program you're looking at,
I'm someone that has like an intellectual or developmental disability that has their own home is more or less is what I'm trying to say. Because take me for instance, I have my own home. So that's basically what I'm trying to say is there any penalties for that, or is there anything that might make things lower for that? I mean, these are all questions that, I've been thinking as I've listened to you talk, that I thought I should go ahead and ask just to find out.
So it would depend. The answer is it depends. It depends on which benefit program you're talking about. So sometimes home ownership can negatively affect your eligibility for programs. We don't care if you have a home or not. It doesn't matter. We're just gonna, it's like a savings account, so we're just taking your money.
But there are no penalties if you do own your own, correct?
Right. It doesn't matter whether you own your house or not. It's your disability that determines if you're eligible to participate in the plan.
So say if I had my own property and I wanted to invest, would there be a need to be a certain age that I would need to be able to do that?
No, the assumption is if the individual's a minor, then their parents are making those choices for them. But for you, if you're an adult, you can make your own choice as to which investment option you want.
And how do you know which is the best to choose from? Do they give you do they have certain things that you can look at to pick from which is the best, or you know?
Yeah, so the website, we have a lot of tools. Our website is very accessible, and we have a lot of tools on there to help you make those decisions. And so we have a conservative, moderate, and aggressive portfolio designs. So the more conservative means less risk and therefore less return. The more aggressive, you might earn a lot of money, but you also have a greater chance of losing some money.
Right, right. If let's say you did own your own home, and for instance, because like I said, I'm my own guardian and I have my own home, would that affect if something was to happen to me, would I lose my home through that? Is there a possibility of that?
No, not that I'm aware of. Your home is your own separate entity. It's not going to be part of the ABLE program.
Because I know a lot of times, like when they say about different programs, they talk about, you know, they don't always put out the fine print about, you know, people who own their own places. So this is why I'm just curious, and this is why I figured I'd go ahead and ask these questions, because, you know, I am a homeowner and I don't want to do anything to put my home or my living situation in jeopardy. So that's why I thought I'd go ahead and maybe ask that just to kind of see where we're at with that. If there's any risk to that person that might have their home.
Yeah, so I hear your question, but for ABLE, it doesn't matter whether you own a house or not.
Okay. I see.
Peter, could you please go back to the slide just before the one that we're currently on? Something caught my eye on there. Yes, the recap. So from what I'm reading on the recap, it's implying that someone who is not receiving SSI can be eligible for an ABLE account. Is that correct?
Right. So SSI or SSDI is just a way you can show our program that you can meet the qualifications and are eligible for ABLE accounts. But you cannot, you could receive none of that and still be eligible for an ABLE if you just get a doctor or a psychiatrist to sign off and certify that you meet the Social Security definition of disability. Social Security is a little bit different than like veterans or military service. It's the inability to work. You know, it's not like some of our service members who may used up their body and they come out after 20 years of being a soldier. You know, 20%.
I have another question. What if the person receives a benefit from a survivor? Let's say, like, if the person's had a parent that's passed away and they have, like, a survivor benefit, because where I get my income is through my dad. My dad is no longer living, and he left me a survivor benefit. and it's actually rolls into SSDI, which is a one-time payment of $1,178, and that's pretty much what I make since he's passed on. Would that affect any ability to possibly get an ABLE, or would you be allowed to do that if you're receiving some kind of benefit from someone else, like a relative, such as a father or a mother and stuff?
Right. So no, just because you're receiving that benefit that your dad left you, it does not prevent you from getting an ABLE account.
And what is the age category for that, if I might go ahead and ask?
So the age of onset of the disability had to be by age 26.
So if you're over that,
any age to get into the ABLE. But did your disability happen before age 26?
Okay, I see. I see what you're saying. I get it.
Yeah, so like my son has Down syndrome, so something he was born with. Mm-hmm. So, and it's a developmental disability, so he qualifies at day one, but he might not get an ABLE account until he's maybe 30 years old. But because mm-hmm. it happened before age 26, he can enroll at age 30.
I see. Okay. That makes sense. Thank you for that.
Yep. And did I answer the question for the person that was interested in the recap slide?
Yes, you did. Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions before we move on? Well, thank you, Peter. That was really helpful, succinct information, and I know people can access you with your contact information there if they have individual questions they want to follow up with. So we appreciate you. Okay.
I'm gonna jump. Thanks.
All right, thank you. Okay, so our next agenda item is a legislative update from Darla. Are you still with us?
I don't know if it's best to say, are you still with us? Because it kind of sounds like someone is dying.
It kind of does.
Are you still here? Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can, Darla, loud and clear.
Okay, great. Hopefully I'm not dying tonight, Lindsay.
Oh, I hope not, anyway.
Carefully across the house. So there's not a ton to update you on legislatively. We did meet today. It was our first pre-session for Advocacy Days, and we met with quite a few senators and legislators. Lots of promises and exciting, hopeful things for the legislative session to come. But, of course, the session doesn't start until January. Assembly days for the committees are happening November the 15th and the 16th. And on November the 17th, JLARC is going to be hearing the North Star. Now, do you guys know what the North Star Project is? Have I explained that to you? No, Meredith says. Okay. So North Star, when we got a group of new leaders on a state level, they decided that they wanted to go after an omnibus bill for developmental disabilities, instead of, in the past, they feel like things have been a little piecemealed and that we've just been getting bits and pieces, and they wanted to really ask for what was needed. So to identify what that is and to have a transparency process, the North Star Group has been meeting with anywhere from, 50 to, what do you think, Mona, 150? Individuals over the last year. They started meeting in January. They have broke down into multiple groups depending upon what their focus is, because we know that if we're going to try to fix the DD system, lots of areas need to be fixed. So there's a housing group, there's a health and insurance group, there's a group on employment and day services, there's a group on services, service systems. There's a group on transportation. There's a group on civil rights.
And these groups have been meeting and having very difficult, hard conversations to try and hone down and identify what the issues are that we need to address within those specific areas. The group, the North Star group, and there's been people from all over the state. We've had quite a few people from Clark County participating in that. And the group is meeting on the 12th to try to hone down some of its final areas that it's going to present to the legislature in the beginning of this omnibus bill. We actually have two legislators that have stepped forward. Representative Taylor and Representative Caldair have agreed to be the lead on this North Star project. And we are presenting this project to the JLARC committee on November the 17th. So, that being said, it's kind of like a big, I hate to say wish list because that makes it sound unimportant and all, everything in those, you know, what we've found is that our system is very, very broken and we've been really underfunded for a significant amount of time. And to get it fixed and to get it fixed appropriately, it's some pretty big asks. We also know that not all of it's going to go forward this year.
Right.
So trying to decide what is it that we start with and what do we continue with. So that's really where most of the effort has been being done. That being said, the advocacy leadership on a state level has been meeting with legislators all summer and fall. And Senator Braun was there today, as well as others, probably five or six different senators and legislators that were there, all speaking on behalf of carrying forward the message from the IDD community in what needs to be done to help make this service system more functional for all individuals. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a 9,000-foot snapshot. Questions?
I see in the chat, Darla, that somebody's wanting to know if the legislative reception date has been set yet.
It has, and I'll have to check that, and then I'll put it back in the date, or back in the chat for you guys, because I'm not sure of the exact date. And also, I did want to let you guys know to pay close attention to what's going on a federal level, because the infrastructure bill that they're trying to get through the on a federal level. There you go. Thank you, Patrick. Could have the biggest impact for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities is anything that I've seen in the 30 years that I've worked in the field. It would increase that Social Security cap rate, because right now you can only have a $2,000 maximum resource limit, right?
Yeah.
So it would increase that. Yeah, it would take away the marriage penalty. It would really just do so much to benefit individuals. And so really pay close attention to that. The ARC on a national and state level has actions alerts that are out. If you want to speak to your delegates on either side, would be important for them to hear from you. And what else, guys?
Are we looking to form a advocacy group in Clark County? Because if we are, I'd like to maybe help maybe make that happen. If we could get a group like for our area where we could get self-advocates to meet and maybe bring some of Clark County's stuff to the table and see what we can do to maybe help the state in other areas with things that are happening in their areas, as well as adding on to the legislative agenda?
That would be phenomenal, Patrick. And yes, we are looking to do that. We would have already had it done, but Miss Hattie got married this summer, or this fall, actually. Mm-hmm. What month are we in? Just a few weeks ago. So she has been a little busy and taking care of some other things, but that is definitely on track to get going before session is over this year. Well, so stay tuned and we'll be reaching out to you.
And when that happens, please, please, at that point, please make it a must that you reach out to me, because I want to be a part of that as much as I can. If I can give input or do whatever, or just, you know, kind of help move, get something like that going, I would love to see that happen for this area.
Me too, Patrick. And I will make sure you're at the top of the list.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I want to be involved, definitely, for that. And thank you, Darla, for everything you do.
Oh, you're so welcome. I was just checking to see if I had the forum on my calendar, and I am not finding it. So I'm going to have to go digging for that and get back to you guys for the legislative reception. I apologize for not having that available. Thank you, Darla, for your input and speaking of the legislator. Our next agenda item is our agenda while you are hunting for the legislative reception date. And so we talked a little bit about our legislative agenda, I think last time we met, or we at least brought it up. Mm-hmm. And in last year's agenda, our focuses were in three areas, and that was employment, transition, and housing, and looking at survey input from our community stakeholders that filled out the surveys, that those are still really high priorities, as well as recreation. And so as we work to craft our agenda, our task is to figure out if there's some agenda item we can maybe marry, like employment transition somehow, if those could go together, and we could add recreation and housing. We don't want to have a laundry list, like you said, Darla, too many wishes, because then it just seems unfathomable. I want it to be something that feels attainable. And so, Trish, do we want to share what we've had drafted in the past so people can see it and
sure.
We can go from there? Or would work better?
And based on input from the board, I did take a go at kind of trying to combine some things and highlighted an area that the board might want to consider. So I will share my screen. This is based on last year's agenda. And there was also some discussion about, aging. So there's a space for that if y'all decide that that's what the way you want to go, but let me share my screen and I'll, pull it up here. So this still says 2021, but we would change that to 2022. So, based on the input from the board, we've got this, kind of employment section here that talks about people working. And then I just tucked the, kind of transition, piece and the higher ed piece underneath that. I highlighted here at minimum wage or better, because minimum wage is no longer in Washington State. It is being phased out. I heard, last legislative session, I'll start 2 years ago, the legislature got rid of sub-minimum wage for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities in state government jobs. And it was asked that they get rid of sub-minimum wage for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities altogether. But that is what they did last year. So last year there was a law passed that, said that, sub-minimum wage is being phased out. No new sub-minimum wage certificates will be issued in the state of Washington, and, that DDA is charged to transition those people who are receiving services under a sub-minimum wage certificate, that they be supported to explore other options, to earn at least minimum wage or better. So, that's just something for y'all to consider, that, you know, it might be time that we look at, an emphasis on a living wage or livable wages or something else besides at minimum wage or better, because it should all be at minimum wage or better now. So that's just something for you all to consider. And then the language around housing and residential supports, this is the same as what we had last year on the legislative agenda. What I do want to mention about this is that housing was number two in community input when we did the survey for the comprehensive plan. In years past and through other efforts of getting community input, employment and recreation have been one and two. This year it was employment, and housing was number two. And housing was a close number two in the public input that we received. So, you know, I think that y'all are on the right track about making sure that this is something that you, have is something important. Last year there was some discussion about aging, and supporting people who are aging and have disabilities. In the research, I found that, you know, really it's kind of, a couple of different things that people with disabilities themselves who are aging. And by the way, the number of people who, are over 65 in Clark County, I will say in the course of the previous 5-year plan, it was mentioned that that number had doubled, more than doubled, in the years prior to that. What I will say now is that we've kind of stabilized, in the number of people that have intellectual and developmental disabilities and that are over 65, if that makes sense. So we were climbing for a while, and really increasing greatly in the number of people over 65. And now we've kind of, plateaued at that level, that we had climbed to. So, there's the issue of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities kind of deserve to have access to the same things that everybody else does as they age. And then there's also the issue of aging caregivers. So there might be people, who are caring for their children, who are themselves, elderly and begin to need support. And one of the, sources that I cited in the one page document that I pulled together, was talking about how there are then some people with disabilities that then are caregivers for their aging parents. So it kind of, the script is flipped. So that's kind of a little bit about that aging piece. So now y'all get to discuss and see what you think. And what you want to include, because this is your agenda. This is what y'all want to be talking to the legislators about, and making sure that our elected legislators know and understand about intellectual and developmental disabilities in Clark County.
Can I make one comment, Trish?
Sure.
I just want to say that, just to remind people that, developmental disabilities is not currently forecasted. And if it was forecasted, a lot of the other issues would hopefully be dealt with on an ongoing basis. Hopefully.
Do you want to talk a little bit more about what that means, Darla, forecasting, just in case there are people who aren't as familiar with that term?
Sorry.
Yeah, I know we're supposed to be raining today, but
no. I appreciate it. I'm sorry. So forecasting. So the schools, the students in the schools are forecasted. The seniors are forecasted. It's an educated assumption based on previous numbers of how many individuals will be accessing that service in the next budget cycle, right? So for school districts, for senior services, for almost every social service except developmental disabilities, they're forecasted. So they automatically get that increase based on what they anticipate the number to be, right?
So, you know, we think schools are going to go up, you know, 5%. I'm just making up numbers, right? The budget's going to go up to accommodate that automatically. In the world of developmental disabilities, nothing is forecasted. And this is something we've been working on clear back to the days of when Senator Zarelli was there, trying to get this forecasted so that they can say, okay, we're going to anticipate this many individuals in Washington State are who experience an intellectual and a developmental disability is going to need a service. Therefore, we're going to automatically raise the budget X amount. Right now, they don't raise it unless we go advocate for it. There is no built-in increase as there is for any other social service, and it's due to the lack of forecasting.
Right.
Has anybody asked them why they're not forecasting that particular line item?
Oh, yeah.
What's their answer?
Well, it depends on who you ask. One of the things is that it would be so expensive, and the way that our service system, so developmental disabilities does not have to provide anything that they don't have funding to provide. The only entitlement that there is the institutions, if you qualify, or Medicaid personal care, which is now called Community First Choice. So excuse me for using old terminology. Nothing else is an entitlement. Therefore, they only as they choose to increase the budget, do new people get services, or do people get the increased services that they need? The concern is that they, sorry, I had somebody knocking on my door, window. I don't know if that makes sense, and I got lost in my conversation by the person knocking on the window. Walt, I see you talking, but you're on mute.
I'm sorry. It seems that we could blend in advocating for forecasting at the same time that we're advocating for employment, housing, and aging. Because if I'm a legislator, I want to be able to know how much I'm spending, theoretically. And by making it more quantifiable rather than anecdotal or advocacy, you know, motivated, it could be an easy thing for us to add in or blend in as we're speaking to these folks and also writing them. What do others think? That much, huh? Okay.
Yeah, but if we're going to do that, are there going to be specific, like, things that we're going to ask for? Like if we're going to forecast it, like, they're going to want to say, okay, what is it we're looking for forecasting? Like, you know, because as you move into the older gap, like say as a person with an intellectual disability who is getting older, you never know what kind of things you're going to be looking at health wise down the road. So they might want to look at, okay, if we're going to do that, how is that money going to, how are we going to use that money to,
seems to be the beauty of it, Patrick, is the fact that we don't come across as dinging them, for more money, as my mom used to say when we were in the grocery store, quit dinging me. And at the same time, it provides a little bit of a predictability, if you will.
Right.
By adopting that course of action.
Right.
We can say we're not going to bug you as much because now you have more of a scientific or, you know, predictable type of process.
Right. Makes sense.
So, for example, if they forecasted employment, right, that's something that every couple years we figure out how many kids are going to be leaving school at 21. who qualify for developmental disabilities, right? And how many need, which basically equates to how many basic plus waiver increases we're going to need so that individuals can have their job coach and their employment services, right?
Right.
But the reality is we go and ask for that all the time. If they forecasted employment services or baby services, the birth to three services, right, then they're going to know. I mean, in theory, you should know by age three how many people are going to graduate in what year and need those services, right?
Right.
Based upon what's going on. It shouldn't be, sorry, I'm on a soapbox. I'm going to be quiet. I'm not a board member.
Okay. But you know what, Dara, you have good input, so finish that thought. I think that's a very wise thought.
I think you guys have good leadership, so I'm going to be quiet and listen to your leadership.
I guess I sort of have a feeling of unease about the entire thing, because when I learned how many people self-identified as having an intellectual or developmental disability who actually filled out our survey, that number was incredibly low. And, you know, I feel kind of irked when I think about how we're taking the priorities from a survey that was filled out by a majority of people who do not have IDD, and then it goes to our advisory board, which is also a place where a majority does not have IDD, and then it goes to the legislature where I don't think anyone in the legislature has an IDD, and then all of that directly impacts people who do have IDD. So, like, I think maybe for the future, I would really hope to see more people with IDD fill out our surveys. And, I mean, I can't speak to anyone's individual experience, but I don't see how it should be that hard. Like, assuming that each person who filled out the survey knows at least one person with an intellectual or developmental disability, it should be a no-brainer that they go talk to that person and they say, hey, I found this survey about something that might directly affect you in the future. You should take it. And statistically, that would be more likely to get us more opinions from the community itself. I mean, there is always the saying that you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
Yeah, statistically,
if every person like reached out to somebody that they knew and said, hey, please take this survey, we would get more responses from the community.
Well, and certainly we could frame it that way as well, you know, that like, hey, we would like you to fill this out, but hey, if you know somebody with a disability, can you help them to fill it out or, you know, get this to that person? So we can certainly, you know, put that out there and kind of try to message that a little bit better. And also, you know, one of the things that I think as a board and with the comprehensive plan, we would like to be doing, or we as a program, the program staff kind of want to be able to have kind of an avenue for ongoing feedback and, you know, input and feedback. So that might be something for us to emphasize as well, you know, going forward.
Yeah, I don't think the legislative priorities we have on the agenda right now are bad, per se. And I think that we can continue with what we have. And Darla, I definitely think that if Patty is able to arrange that self-advocacy group, then we could find ways to incorporate their feedback.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. Is Ted with us? Usually Ted has some good input for us, and I haven't heard his voice yet.
No, I haven't heard a word from Ted.
He might be driving, though. He could be in traffic, but I thought he was here.
I'm here.
What wisdom do you have for us?
I was just talking to my wife and thinking what an incredible group of people you are. Think of all the stuff you've done and all the work Darla does and how articulate this young lady was just speaking in. It's, I'm just listening and enjoying that you guys put up with me.
Do you have any input for our legislative agenda?
I like it. I talked last time about adding the older people, you know, adding, and thanks to the agency people, and thanks to Trish for doing the research on that. I think that was my only concern as we see more and more people who do live longer and have, you know, have additional needs besides their other disabilities. They have the disability of being old. So I think that's the only thing I would add.
I'll tell you what, I'm 47. I have more senior moments, not too many to count. I'll tell you that already. Senior moments to count.
Yeah. So on our agenda right now, we have aging as a heading. We don't have any kind of clarification or wording to go along with that. So how do we want to... Ted, you brought up some good points about the impact of aging in addition to just challenges with navigation and all that as it is. And I like what Trish looks like she's sharing. What she said, you know, earlier that, you know, all people 55 and older should be able to live as full of lives as anyone else their age, regardless of their status as with an intellectual developmental disability or not. And so do we want to adopt something from what's on the screen here? Because we're going to need to make some decisions and come to consensus so we can move forward with our agenda.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Well said, Susan.
Well, we need to hear also from... There you go. Thank you, Meredy.
Is that this needs to be brought up to the people that we're going to talk to, because that is a huge piece, you know, if that needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. It is. You know,
on like systems navigation, access the resources, or that the resources need to be more readily available as far as like full disclosure, or what are we wanting to recommend that they do?
Well, I mean, the whole thing about this is not checked on or accounted for, that everything else is, that it needs to be something consistent that they hear every year. Mm-hmm. I don't know, does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, it's just like Trish brought up earlier, that we've got an aging demographic of people with IDD. We've got aging caregivers that are supporting somebody with an IDD. And we've got people with IDD that are supporting their aging parents. And so there's a multiplicity or some sort of a cross effect. Trish, if you scroll down to where it says given the demographic imperative to that next section, is there something in there that maybe resonates with people?
You know, one of the things that occurs to me that we don't have in the legislative agenda that has really come to a head during the pandemic is kind of the staffing crisis. Businesses are having a hard time recruiting and retaining staff. Social service organizations are definitely as well. You know, the difference is that, you know, when a restaurant can't recruit enough staff, they might be closed on a Sunday or, you know, or they have to limit their hours that they're open. But if there's not enough people to support individuals, you know, their lives are potentially at stake and their opportunities are significantly could be restricted and reduced. So, you know, it occurs to me that, you know, possibly there's something there in the caregiver and support staff shortage that y'all might want to be talking about in relation to kind of all of the things as well.
Okay, just I have a thought as well. Have we ever thought about reaching out to like assisted living and like retirement communities to get their input on what they think? Because if anybody would understand that probably better, it would be that, because maybe giving them the survey, kind of seeing what their thoughts and feelings are. Because I know where I work, there's a definitely a need for that, because people are always telling me they're afraid to speak up or they're afraid to do this because they're afraid of, okay, if they do X, Y, and Z, you know, what's going to happen if I speak up for myself? And I think, you know, they would probably understand better. So maybe reaching out to assisted living or retirement centers and just kind of getting feedback from them on what, you know, what they see or what they've gone through, just to kind of get an idea. I don't know. It's just a thought.
Excuse me. Darla, can you give us an idea if the legislators that you're aware of and interact with, is this even on their radar?
The
aging issue?
What's on their radar more is the aging of the caregivers, right? Because 90% mm-hmm. of all individuals with IDD live at home with a parent. And as individuals are aging, so are their families and their caregivers. So that's on their radar somewhat. I mean, if they're hearing anything about it, that's what they're hearing, right?
The reason why I asked that question is that maybe our approach is the first step, meaning this year, we introduce more awareness regarding the aging population of those individuals that are receiving service. And you can start putting two and two together, is that the natural caregiver group is aging. And then on top of it, the individuals with IDD are aging. And that means there's going to be a greater demand on the medical industry or the medical field, because if the parents or the caregivers aren't able to provide that, then the only other choice is going to be Medicaid or Medicare that's going to have to be used. And so situations like we have in our family, we have an individual in a assisted living home that needs more intense medical assistance and have a greater skill set. And if nothing else, we're saying to them, hey, be aware, this is coming. You need to start planning for it. And so I think like the paragraph that I'm looking at right now, where it starts with given and ends with color, that could be an awareness bullet that can go with our presentations and with our material.
I think that's a good idea, Walt. I know that they're also talking, the North Star Group has brought up the aging issue and the fact that individuals and caregivers are both aging and are going to need a different level of support, because our state has historically relied on family members to be the primary caregivers.
Right.
And even during the pandemic, the residential settings have lost 25% of their clientele, mm-hmm. either through moving out or because they couldn't get the staffing to, couldn't keep staffing up to keep people in. Mm-hmm. So it is, it is an issue. It's a big issue. And so I think having it as a educational point might be a smart move.
It's not like we're as a matter of fact, kind of counter the impression that we're just asking them for more stuff. This gives off at least the impression that we're concerned about them being ready for something, an eventuality we know is going to take place.
Which, to me, when you're talking to these people, I mean, it should resonate with them because none of us are getting younger. We're all getting older.
Yeah, and that's you're right, Meredy. That is a good point, valid point. Because, I tell myself all the time, I'm not no spring chicken, but...
The other thing is that I'm always telling myself the legislators that we have today were not the legislators we had 15 years ago.
Right.
We are getting younger and newer legislators all the time. And remembering that we need to educate them as well as, you know, continue to communicate.
Well, it's just like they tell us when we go to session, okay, when we did session, they said, if people don't come to advocacy days or come to the legislative and talk to them about what their needs are, they're not going to know because they're just like us. They're all human. If they want change to happen instead of talking about a good talk, you know, it's like they've told me actions speak louder than words.
Now, Trish, as you're reformatting this additional paragraph, would it be possible to add some statistics? We're now in the age of science. It's science, you know, all that kind of stuff. But if we somehow had some kind of statistical comparison between, let's say, 20 years ago, like you said, and today,
right?
I mean, that's going to hit them straight in the face.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Are you thinking, you know, I could definitely get the data about the growth in the number of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities over age 65 and what that is. Yeah. And add that in there.
And make it, in my opinion, make it specific to Clark County.
Mm-hmm.
The reason being is these are Clark County representatives. If they're like me, they could care less what's happening in King County. In fact, they can flush it for as long as I'm concerned. But that's just my conservative bent. But if you could even delineate it by district, like the 17th, the 18th, the 49th.
I'm not sure if I can do that, but I'll look.
Realize it's old pretty dang fast.
I can try. I don't know that I'll be able to delineate it by legislative district.
Oh, come on. Well, just make it up.
There's also the statistics around the worker shortages of if an aging caregiver is not going to provide support, who is? Because, you know, like everybody has said, and my family's in the same situation, the children are supporting the parents. You know, because anybody we hire might show up once, and this is through agencies, and then they, for some reason or another, are not available to come back anymore.
I know that... I know that the National Association of State DD Directors has been talking about caregiver shortages for many, many years, and I'd imagine that they have some data on that. What I've seen, is that they had data on literally population estimates and they made some assumptions, right? So they made assumptions about, hey, most caregivers are women between the age of 18 and 50 years old. And that based on population estimates, that number is decreasing while needs of, you know, aging not only people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, but aging baby boomers who might need some help with some things. So, you know, they, and that those two populations are going to compete for that same pool of potential, support professionals. So they talk about it in those kind of terms. So I can look to see what the National Association, of State DD Directors has so far as data and projections and estimates. And I can definitely include that. I don't know where I would find, although if it's clear enough what they're talking about, I might be able to find population estimates. I might be able to dig through the census and do it specific for Clark County, but I'll see what I can find.
I would look at, I would turn to the Southwest Washington Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities for two reasons. One is that they're going to have the resources of the National Area Agencies on Aging, which will give you some information. And then also, given that their charter also includes people with disabilities, one of the things is that some of the care providers that are now assisting people with IDD they're becoming disabled. They are not maybe intellectually disabled or developmentally disabled, but now they have to work or they have to exist with a use of a mobility device. Then right. There's a trickle down effect that you have in the services, like one that I'm most aware of is public transportation. So now you got this continued surge of demand for some of these services that they need to be prepared for. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Yes. Well said, Walt.
Yeah. And so, Trish, back up. It's so funny. My teaching partner's name is Trish. I keep saying that. When you go back up to the top, also where you highlighted in yellow about, I liked what you said about a living wage versus minimum or better.
Minimum, yeah.
Okay.
What do you guys think of, what do my other colleagues think about that?
Thumbs up from 10. I don't know if you could see that.
I'm good grief. I got a dog that's loving their dad.
Patrick's dog gives a thumbs up too, it sounds like.
Oh yeah, she loves her papa.
I would agree with what Susan said.
Yeah.
I do too.
I think that sounds good. Yeah, it does.
Who's employment for all individuals of working age to earn a living wage? Would it be to earn a living wage?
I would say because in order to be able to live, we need a decent enough living wage to be able to.
I feel something weird about that sentence.
Yeah,
can I work on that? You want to empower me to come up with something that sounds better?
Like really overtime here. I'm about ready to fall off my chair. Do we have
a lot covered tonight?
Kind of, yeah. We had a little extra. Do we have sort of a consensus here that this is we're in the right direction? We're in the ballpark with our legislative agenda, and we want to decide if we want to move forward with this and take a vote.
Yeah. I like that idea, Susan. I think that's a great idea.
Do
they want to make a motion?
I'll motion it.
Okay. I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye. Not opposed. I was saying in favor.
Sorry.
Thanks,
and I really like, I mean, just moving forward and thinking about next year, I really like Lindy's input when we met, I think as a work group before, about, I mean, prospective employers looking at different ways to determine people's capacities as far as employment perspectives and kind of getting rid of some of the old school perceiver tests and getting to know the individual that may be very well suited for the job, but just doesn't present well in a traditional interview. I think we need to start working on our legislative agenda in like May. We get all our bases covered, so by November we're like, okay, we've got this.
We got our T's and our I's dotted and crossed.
Well, you know, in years past, you have kind of approved this agenda. You know, it sounds like I know you want me to kind of work on this language a little bit, come up with some data points for the aging piece, and then we'll, and then this will be what it is. But we have put together kind of some talking points to go along with this in the past. And, you know, that's something that I can share with you all and include some of those points that Lindy was talking about, you know, making sure that or doing anything we can to make sure that people have accommodations during the interview process or, you know, just, you know, other things about that could be things that y'all are talking to the legislators about when you meet with them, but wouldn't necessarily be, you know, the thing that you hand to them, but that could be a reference document for yourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I loved her example last time about during a training of how to deal differently. They didn't deal differently. My wife had the same thing. We went to a training for international, how to deal with internationals. And of course she is international. And the person completely blew it with her. It was like, what are you talking about? It was so funny.
Yeah.
It's sad, but it's funny, but it's sad.
And hypocrisy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's complete. I don't know if it's hypocrisy. I think it's just, they don't know what's going on. I mean, it's what's the word? Oblivious. They're just oblivious.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think we've got our legislative agenda in the frying pan. One more item. It's just going forward with our meeting as we ebb and flow with COVID-19. Clearly we're meeting virtually tonight. The advantages of meeting virtually is as winter looms upon us, we don't have to be out trying to commute. We don't have to wear a mask. We can see each other's faces. We can hear each other. The advantage of meeting in person is we all get to snuggle up together. And given our COVID numbers and the opportunity to be maskless, I'm proposing that we continue to meet virtually until our numbers fall into line, maybe next spring or next summer. We can revisit this. Any thoughts or input on that?
I think it's the safest way to go.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree.
A reluctant agreement.
Yes.
I know. Okay, Leanne, are you still with us? Are you still here? Sorry.
I think Leanne might have fallen off, but I do just want to emphasize again that, you know, and thank you all for your input and your decision, because I just want to emphasize or reemphasize that my directive was that this needs to be a board decision to, an advisory board decision to continue with virtual meetings if you wanted to do so. And it sounds like you do. So, thank you all for the discussion and decision there.
Do we have to vote on that one too, or are we good?
I move that we continue for the next 6 months of virtual meetings to ensure the safety of not only ourselves but others.
I'll second that.
Well, All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay. Opposed? All right. Virtual it is.
Who's going to oppose safety? Come on.
Well, I had an interesting conversation with my doctor this week, but that's not for this time. Okay. Is there any other...
Not about safety, it's about freedom.
Anything for the good of the order? Okay, y'all, I declare this meeting adjourned.
May I ask one question real quickly? I've noticed that you just used the phrase y'all, and I've noticed that Trish has been using the word y'all. Did you guys move south or something?
Yeah, right, Texas. Yeah.
Well, part of it is it's just sometimes easier to say that than ladies and gentlemen or boys and girls.
It's gender inclusive.
I picked it up from
the English language has actually lost. The English language has lost that plural. Because mm-hmm. so, you is the same, but actually in the South it's not plural either. It's all y'all.
Y'all.
Okay.
All y'all.
All righty. Thank you.
Good night, and thank you very, very much.
Good night, everybody. Okay.